Hi, HR Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives in the world's leading global brands. Today, we're joined by Julie Sperling, Senior Vice President of Global HR at Software AG. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Nice to see you again. How have you been, nice first and foremost?
Oh, it's been crazy. It's been a crazy several months since we last signed.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's like dog years during COVID. I think I talked to you about 4 years ago now.
Even though it's like a week ago. Yeah. It does feel that way though, right?
It does.
I'm always like, how's the last 12 months? 24 months. Right. Being one I'm speaking to. But how's everyone? How's family? How's everyone doing?
We're good, hanging in there. You know, I've got one kid in his last year of high school here and one in his first year. So bookends in that experience. But everybody's doing well, kind of adapting to this whole new world we live in. And just, you know, things are going great from a work perspective. Lots of exciting stuff happening within the company. No rest for the wicked, as they say.
And you're full-time at home now. Have you always been full-time?
Yeah. No, I was in our office here in Virginia. We have a headquarters for the US location and used to go in every single day and, you know, had flexibility, but, you know, doing what I do, I was like, I'll go in, I'll be with my team. We were all kind of co-located as HR. Since this happened, I've been at home, you know, went just like everybody else. I went from like the armchair to the couch to the dining room table.
Wherever they could find, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Wherever was free.
And now I finally was like, I'm taking our guest room and I'm making
it. You won that battle. You won the battle with the husband.
I did.
I mean, wife and I were like fighting over this, like our kitchen table at one point because we live in a small apartment. We didn't have a spare room. Like many people.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have the space.
Yeah, we forget about that sometimes, right? That like there's people that, you know, don't even have a space. They're living maybe with a couple of friends or something like that. We don't have a spare room. We have a living room that we're all in on calls together and
kids running around. Let alone bandwidth, right? Yeah. You know, when kids or roommates or whatever, everybody was online. I mean, the struggle was real. I actually, my husband is capable and ran a connection into the room for me because the Wi-Fi was just getting really dodgy when everybody was home.
I had a guest on the other day that off camera before we started was like, get off the internet, get off Netflix. I'm doing a show. Because her son was like, I think her son was gaming or streaming on Netflix, one of the two. And our call kept cutting out. And I was like, this is the world. This is all we live in. On more of a selfish note, you mentioned you got two kids at the end of the spectrum. My wife and I have got one young daughter, 3 years old. We're having this conversation right now. Do we wait? You know, do we wait and they're too far apart in the age? Do you get it over and done with? Like, there's this sort of huge debate in our household at the moment. And
I don't think there's a right answer.
No, there isn't. No.
And I think too, you know, it's my first one in no way, shape or form prepared me for my second one. They're extremely different human beings, both of them awesome in their own right, and both boys. And I think that makes a difference too, if you have the same or different and then the age difference. But I think, you know, it comes and goes in waves of how connected they are. But things have been pretty good. Like, you know, they're kind of on a little bit more similar wavelength at this point than they were, say, back in elementary.
What's the gap?
They are four years for school.
Okay. I think I'm like, do I want to wait that long and go back to nappies? And go back to...
Well, I will say this.
And go back to...
But smartly, I was thinking about my friends who have kids that are like a year apart. I'm like, wow, you're like doubling up on college, which here in the States is obnoxious.
Yeah.
So at least for me, assuming my older son does it in time, I won't have two in college at the same time.
Well, maybe by the time he gets there, he's like, you know what? I don't really need college. I have YouTube. I have Google. You know, I've never, not saying that education is not great. I've never went to school, you know, college, university. I just got a job at 17. I was like, let me just go and ask for a job, even for free, because it costs you money to go to college, university. How about just working the job for free and learn how to do the job? You know what I mean? So I do feel like it's changing a lot. I know there's a massive education, It seems like there's a massive push for college education in the US as opposed to in Europe. Like here, it's not so like parents and society. It's not so like you have to go to college. Well, not have to, but I mean, whereas in the US, it's like the goal. It seems is that a thing? It kind of is.
I think for many families, especially in the area where I live, you know, right outside of DC, it's rather hyper competitive. Like, I wish we could actually live somewhere a little less stressful for my younger one, who isn't as type A as my first one. You know, he's more low key. He may decide to do a trade. You know, he may decide military. You know, he doesn't know what he wants to do. He's 14.
Who does exactly? I still don't know sometimes.
But with the older one, he's been dead set from day one, even including the school he wants to go to. So, you know, it's definitely a push, but I think we're seeing now too of like, you know, we've got to take the stigma out of not going to school here and that there's lots of options. There's no wrong way to follow your path. It's got to be your path and it's got to feel right for you and not push kids into tracks.
I felt like I did feel that inferiority complex for a long time. I remember even when I was, you know, the global sales director, my last role, and I realized that out of the 30 salespeople that I was managing, I was the only one with no education. Like every single one of my employees had a degree.
Let me change your words for you though. Let me change your no formal education. Cause you certainly,
I'm glad you pulled me up on that. No, of course. My education was on the job. You know, I learned the hard way. I learned I learned YouTube, Google, books, audiobook, like, you know, I self-taught everything. Literally, you know, when I became a manager, I was like, let me just buy some books on management. Like, I didn't go to do an MBA or go and do a course or stuff like that. But
I didn't go to school for HR. I have a sociology degree, which is very relevant.
Let's be honest, how helpful would that even be in this day and age? Come on.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have people that work on my team who actually did go to school for HR. You know, when I was coming up, it wasn't as common. There were some schools in Virginia that were doing it, but not many. It was kind of, it fell into management, right? Mm. But so as far as HR as a trade, the first job, you know, was given in HR was sort of like the HR person left and they're like, well, Julie can do it. You know, that's kind of how it happened.
So many people start like that, by the way. Right. So
I was like, well, I guess I'll get some books and stuff. The internet was pretty early. So I was like, I'll subscribe to SHRM and I'll figure it out. And so I had to learn HR that way. Very on the fly. You know, the first thing I got was an immigration audit, which that made me learn about that really fast.
I bet. You know, when I hear people things like works councils and stuff like that, and all other things, I'm like, oh my God, like labor, like unions. And I'm like, I do not envy. I do not envy that part of it as well. But yeah, it's interesting. Most people, I think I've said, and for everyone listening, I know you're bored of me saying this, but you know, of the 400 plus or however many people we've interviewed at this point, only a couple actually chose this career. Like very, 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 very few were like, I want to grow up and be in HR. Like, no, like really? And those that did, it was because their mom or their dad worked in HR. Like or a friend, a family member. You see what I mean? Like, or no one was like, I want to work in HR. Like,
I don't even know coming up through college that I really thought of it in existence, right? Like I worked in temporary jobs over summers and things like that in offices, but like I never paid attention to an HR person or, you know, if anything, you heard them as like the negatives.
Police, the police
from the office, right?
The police officers in the office, right? That's what it was.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't even, it was like, again, in the UK, I'm not sure it was the same in the US, but it was like personnel relations.
Personnel relations or even just personnel and payroll.
Yeah, personnel and payroll. Yeah.
Where do I add my wife to my benefits? You know, that was
sure. We've come a long way. Strategic. We've come a long way since then. Well, look, let's jump into some of the areas because there's just so many areas I know you're really passionate about, and I think one that's super relevant is the role of leadership and being a leader. It's changed quite a lot right over the last few years. You know, we're having conversations around well-being. It's been refreshing to see how many leaders now are bringing that element of vulnerability to the table. We've actually been able to look inside the lives through Zoom, a Zoom lens, into people's homes, and it's kind of removed that shield that people had up. And I know that's an area that you're really passionate about.
I really, really am. And I think, you know, some of it is probably coming from coming into my own confidence as a human and as a leader, but really realizing that, you know, what our teams needed to see from us is a healthy realism about what we were all going through in the last couple of years. You know, it was this shared experience that nobody asked for. And, you know, to kind of, you know, as we used to say back in the olden days, you know, leave your problems at the door. Well,
that sounds door? Crazy, but we could just stop there for a second to think that that was something that we said. I haven't heard that in a while, by the way. So you just shocked me by just saying that.
Yeah. Leave your problems. Leave it at the door. And it, you're like,
what?
Huh?
So you just
I'm sorry. That's literally who I am.
Yeah. Right? Don't bring who you are to the table. We don't care about that.
Do not bring your whole person. We do not welcome that here.
It's crazy.
So, you know, it's and I had a leader before that I supported, and he became a great friend. And one of the things, he had spent a lot of time in a role where it's almost like he put on a suit and went to the office every day. It was like wearing a costume, right? Playing a part.
That's how I feel, by the way, now. Because for the first 15 years of my career, I wore a suit to sit at a desk.
Yeah.
And no one even saw me. I didn't even see a customer. Who am I impressing? I remember saying to the team recently, I've got the entire wardrobe. My wife keeps trying to convince me to get rid of all these suits. Because for 15 years, I had all these suits.
You know, I finally did. I have one suit, just in case. I have the just in case suit.
Oh, you have? Yeah. Go carry on. But yeah. I agree with you. Like for so many years, I'm like, I'm playing a role.
And a former CMO I worked with, she also told the story in the kind of this coaching thing that we were doing about how like she had this mad suit with huge shoulder pads. So she thought like,
I remember those suits.
Really
yeah.
Professional. Yeah. And it's like, and I giggled because I think I probably had the same suit and you know, that's who we thought we had to be.
Or remember when women in one of my old companies, women had to wear high heels. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was a thing ever. When I remember, like, this is only what 8-9 years ago. I remember
it's not that long ago.
Yeah, I know exactly the dress code. I remember for me, it was guys. You have to be clean shaven every day. You can't wear the same suit the same 2 days in a row, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. You could. it was even that crazy enough.
That's assuming you have more than one suit.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. I just got my first job. How much money have you got? You couldn't wear. This one's more crazy, but you couldn't wear a shirt that had a pocket. I know, I'm not making it up. You couldn't wear a shirt with a pocket. And again, like clean shaven. And I was like, who am I impressing? I'm calling people. And why are the women walking around in high heels? Anyway, I just remember it being my first time job going, this is just crazy. This is the most craziest thing ever.
And so now, you know, I think the reality is, And it's not just what we thought for so long of like, oh, those California Bay Area companies with all those, you know, their Hawaiian shirts or whatever. Like everybody thought that was crazy and kooky. But no, it's really, okay, I'm going to show you a little secret here, Chris. I'm going to share, right? Go on. This is what's on my foot.
Oh, how dare you. I'm leaving. I'm quitting. I'm
my
leaving the show.
My fuzzy slipper. So I have my, you know, my very professional black top on, but I have pink fuzzy slippers on. And I had my staff call right before this. And I shared with my team. I was like, in case you guys worry, I'm still me. And I showed them my foot.
I remember the other day I was speaking to, I do this call every Monday with a group of leaders called the MG100. It's part of a group led by Marshall Goldsmith, who's one of the top CEO coaches in the world. And I'm on the call with like billionaires. And I realized I was sitting there with a Mickey Mouse t-shirt on. And I was just, and I was like, I looked down, I was like, I'm on a call with all these people. And by the way, they were also dressed like casually, but it just felt, it was a moment for me. I even remember Shane, who's my co-founder, we did a CHRO summit, workshop. And the chief HR officer of Adidas, everyone goes to conferences, all these HR executives are in suits, ties. He turned up in an Adidas tracksuit.
Sweet.
He works for Adidas, so he should be in an Adidas tracksuit. So, this episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode. But everyone, there were people in the room that you could see were not impressed. Like, there were certain CHROs and leaders that were like, it shocked me for a second. It took me back because I'm all, again, all suited and booted and everything. And it was after one of our first events. And I was like, so cool. I was like, cool. And he should be living that. He works for Adidas. So why is it weird that he's walking into a room with an Adidas tracksuit on? This is years ago, by the way. So it was a bit like of a shock to see it. But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be whatsoever.
One of my, when I was at RSA, our president, who's the CEO at a large company now, he was one of the first that I saw really like, you know, he'd roll up in cargo shorts and a t-shirt and whatever. And I remember talking to one of our team, we were having a get together up in Boston, and, you know, the team, many of them were somewhat recent immigrants, and we were talking a little bit, and they said that they actually loved it. They appreciated so much that he just dressed normal. Because the one guy said, very heartfelt, he's like, because it shows me it doesn't matter. Like, you can come from wherever, you can look like whatever, you can be whoever.
100%.
And here's this guy, like, he's like, it makes me feel like, you know, very hopeful and open that anything's possible. And I was like, wow, that's really a lot deeper than like the cargo shorts. That's like a bigger a bigger message.
I'll give you another example of that. Me and Shane, we look, I say, I'm trying to give myself, almost sounds like a compliment myself. We look pretty young, and Shane looks probably like he's 16 years old. He's in the background. He can hear me, by the way, so he won't mind me saying that. So we look really, really young, and we always get surprise from people when they realize that we are the founders and owners of the company. So there's an example where we're at an event, and we were speaking with, actually not going to mention the person's name, but a CHRO from a multi-billion-dollar company that you all know. And we were running the event, and we introduced ourselves, and so she came over to me, and Shane was like, can we speak to the owner, can I speak to the owners of the business? And we were like, yeah, it's us. Like, we're the co-founder. She's like, no. She's like, yeah, I know, I get that, but can I speak to the owners of the business? And we're like, that's us. And she's like, really? Like, really patronizing. Like, right. But so you did this. You brought all these people together. And we were like, yeah. What do we need to dress and look like for you to believe that we are those people? Like, is there like a CEO dress code? Or is there a co-founder dress code? Is there a age limit, for example, that needs to, is there a color, an ethnicity, whatever? And
right.
I remember, like, I found it really fun because I was like, this, I took it as a compliment. And I think Shane was a bit in the middle of like slightly insulted flattered because he looked so young. But I remember us discussing it after, going, wow, like, there really is this stigma attached to, you have to talk, act, look, and a certain way to be perceived as someone of value, if that makes sense. And that was quite a moment.
And I think, you know, it's funny, I even on my call after I revealed my slipper, I was talking to two of my ladies were on the call. A few were had conflicts this morning, and all three of us have curly hair. And I was commenting about the one, her hair looked good. She's like, oh, it's crazy today. And I was like, no. And I said, this notion that we all have curly hair, and for years of my career, I straighten my hair every day. It's like such a girl problem. But
by the way, my wife's black, and it's the same thing. Yeah. She like cannot even remotely leave the house.
You cannot have no natural hair. Yeah. And mine's really curly, if you ever see photos, because it is up. But I straightened it every day. And then I finally, like, years later, was like, what am I doing? Yeah. Like, literally, my hair is me. And to say that curly hair is not professional, it doesn't look polished.
It's crazy.
I'm like, but it's If I am a professional and it is my hair, it is professional hair.
Does that affect your outcome? Are we measure? What are we measuring? As organizations, right. Are we measuring the outcome, or what are we doing? It's almost like we used to be have to be seen to be working, right? It's that kind of notion mm-hmm. as well. Like, unless they're in the office and there's someone,
how do I know they're working?
How do I know they're working? But it's the same thing. I used to think this person I'm selling to has no idea I've got a nice suit on and I'm clean shaven and I'm sitting here. it just makes it with my shiny shoes. It just felt so weird for me. For some a worse version of this, I actually haven't shared this much because it's quite bad. I don't want to kind of put down the company that I used to work for too much, but I suppose they've changed since then, hopefully. Is when I came, I grew up in a very urban, East London, very multicultural. So I had an accent, there was certain slang. I didn't speak the Queen's English, as it were. Let's just put it that way
Neither do I, so,
And so when I, first job in the city, and I was seen as the kid from the ghetto, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of my managers, I could see that he was trying not to insult me, but it didn't matter. And he was like, "You should read this every day." And I was like, "What is?" And it was the Financial Times, because you need to educate yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, super passionizing. Like, basically, you came from a poor background. You don't have any education. Right. He knew I didn't have any education. So just assumed I'm dumb, basically, and was like, "You should read the Financial Times every day." I was like, okay. And then it got worse. Then they brought in a guy called Brian Orell. I remember his name very clearly because I remember it was one of the most strangest moments of my entire life, to do elocution lessons. Mm. So you basically want me to act and create a persona and talk completely different and become a robot, like you're almost like you're printing people, like clones, right. So there was me, it wasn't just me, it was me and a group of, I think it was like 10-15 people, was told how to pronounce things, say things, how to talk, act, even to the point where there were certain people that had different names, changed our names.
That's offensive.
So this is a sales floor, right? So they're like, "Oh, Chris Rainey's not a great name, let's call you Rich King, Richard King," right? I wish, you're laughing, but I wish this was a joke. It's not a joke. And I remember speaking to, because this was in HR, by the way. So this company sold solutions to HR, which is how I got in this world. And I remember last year, I was speaking to one of our big vendor partners, and they were like, "Oh, I used to work with so-and-so, Chris, at your company." And I was like, "I don't know who that was," because it was the fake name. So this person had been working with this person for over 10 years. And had no idea that it was not a real name. And it just, we were just, I was, and I told the person their real name, and they're like, no way. I've met him. But it is just crazy how companies were trying to form this whole bring yourself full self to work it was just a facade, basically.
Right. I mean, it's very painful to kind of look, because like you mentioned earlier, that's not that long ago. And now, we're trying to do things, using, AI and ML to like filter resumes, to filter out things like bias, right? We don't want to, remove the name so we can't automatically judge it, or remove the address so we can't judge, "Oh, well, that person comes from that part of town." Mm-hmm. All of these different things to try to help us overcome what's been ingrained in our brains for generations. And, I'm optimistic that we're going to get there, but I'm still disappointed that we have so far to go.
Yeah. Have you got any examples of like leaders that you've worked with that have done this in a great way or vice versa that sort of come to mind?
So one of the things that I spent some time within the Vista private equity portfolio, and one of their best practices, there's a lot of really wonderful things in PE. There's a lot that's very unique and kind of stressful. Mm-hmm. So dual-edged sword. But one of the things that they really push, and not only is it extremely good from a business bottom line, but also from a career and talent framework, is the high potential entry level notion. So you're taking people that maybe do not have any work experience. In India, they call them freshers, new grads, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you're bringing them in, you're giving them a chance, through a boot camp process of getting up and running, equal footing, everybody kind of comes in like a cohort.
Okay.
And then they almost sort of self-compete. So, you're bringing in 8 software developers into the team together, you know, survival of the fittest here. And what was great is it didn't matter. So when we did these hiring events, I had a great partner, and she happens to actually work with me now again, that we were really open. And it wasn't, you know, yes, I had a kid from Columbia, but I also had somebody from, you know, Rowan in New Jersey, which is liberal arts, I guess. Right. Like it was very,
everyone's on the same level playing field.
Yeah. Very agnostic as to your experience where like,
yeah,
can you do this? This operates with an aptitude test thing too, which is a huge topic for, it could be a whole session on that. But the good thing was, is it really was like, I want to know how you think and your capability of learning. So we saw this in this one young man, he came to us like after we'd done the offer and everything, and he felt that he had to disclose to us that, he had autism. We'd sort of deduced perhaps already. And we were like, okay, yeah. And like, what do you need? And he seemed surprised that we were okay with it, which kind of was a moment for me of like,
yeah,
oh, I'm sorry, yeah, you're surprised. Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, your experience have led you to feel that we would be surprised, you know. But he needed to wear his headphones all the time, which that was like a thing. I don't care. That's like one of the least weird things we see in the office. And he also, what we found was, you know, one of his extreme talents was identifying anomalies. And so he was reviewing code for bugs. I mean, like, this is what a great fit. And, you know, I think
he may not have fit the traditional job description, right, persona.
And he wouldn't have gone through an interview process. So we had a very specific interview process that gave them activities and things that they did through this process of, you know, of the hiring event that we did. So it gave him an opportunity to shine without having to sit down and just go through a grilling of a traditional interview process. And I think things like that really, the more you can replicate those kinds of experiences and open the aperture to a broader talent scope, the better the company is.
I love that.
Overall.
Honestly, I love that. You're so right. We had a guy, so much to relate to there. And that was one of the eye-opening things for me is, again, when I walked into that sales role, I was so scared about the fact that, or not scared, just kind of like felt like an inferiority complex because,
yeah, lesser.
I didn't have an MBA or a, you know, a degree, or, and everyone else did, literally everyone else did. And I only got my job because I somehow blagged my way in into the interview process. But what I realized is we all, as soon as we started doing sales training or getting on the phones, that none of that mattered.
Right.
Like literally level. Equalized. Yeah. Right. I was like, you are in the exact same space as me. Like there's, it doesn't matter that the fact that I came from a poor upbringing and that you came from a welfare upbringing. It doesn't matter that you got education. I didn't have education. And I was just one of the first time I felt really empowered. And I was like, I can learn all of this. I've got the training. Right. I can learn how to sell. I can do all these things and I can compete. And it was like, that was for me, was probably one of the most motivating things I've ever, situations I've ever been in. Cause I was like, it's me against me in right. that way. Your biggest challenge is yourself at that exactly. point of view. But
and that's what you want for people, right? Yeah. You want them to be able to feel inspired to kind of spark themselves forward and not walk in with that feeling of being less or that inferiority, because immediately that's going to shy the person away. It's going to dim their light, right? And what you want to bring out is that every opportunity for the person to shine bright.
Yeah. And also a lot of the way that companies position these roles, those people won't even apply in the first place. Because they're
waiting. You read the descriptions, yeah, and
no.
I still deal with this all the time, with especially technical roles, where, you know, it's a kitchen sink job description, and I'm like, okay, can we do some ors instead of ands? Could you do this or this or you know? And if everything has to have 10 to 15 years experience, you're closing your pipeline of crazy. Talent.
They can learn
so much.
Yeah, like so. By the way, the role I got, and I don't want to bore the listeners because they've listened to this a million times during the podcast. So I'll say it quickly just so you know. So my role, it was 2 years sales experience and a degree, and I had none of that. But I went to the interview because I'd met the couple of the founders at a bar randomly, got talking to them, and I said, I need a job, please help me. I didn't know what they did, and they gave me that chance. So I would never have ever applied for that role because it said 2 years sales experience and you need a degree. And yet I was there for 10 years and became one of the most successful leaders in the entire organization. And similar, and similar,
people need a chance.
Exactly. And similar, there was a guy called Cameron who was autistic as well. And he was quiet, introvert, the opposite of what you think in sales. Like the traditional outgoing extrovert sell, like everything that he was the opposite, and they hired him. I don't even know how. I think it was a recommendation from a friend, because otherwise he would never have been there. And he was a machine. Like he knew every market. Again, he always wanted to sit. He requested to sit far away from the sales floor because of the noise, and he wanted to be, just leave him alone, basically. Just leave me alone.
Yeah.
Let me just do my thing.
Let me do my thing.
Let me do my thing. This is how crazy it is. Like, so, and he broke all-time records every year there. It got to the point where almost the rest of the company was demoralized that no one could win any other sales award because Cameron would win. And he knew the phone numbers off by heart of every company that he sold to. How great, like, you'd be like, Cameron, what's the phone number for Pfizer? And you'd be like, and you'd just read it, he would just tell you it. Like, because again, that's the way his brain worked. Yeah, and
it's brilliant.
And even when we did the global, sort of the monthly sales awards, he wouldn't turn up because it was too overwhelming. Because, you know, so they would go, Cameron wins. And everyone's like, yeah, Cameron's won again. every year. And he would be downstairs on the phone. Yeah. Whilst they're up there, but he was, again, he was one of just one, actually. There was very, like, there was no one else like him, and it just I think just so happened he came in a non-traditional path like me. But imagine how many Camerons are out there, or the gentleman that you mentioned, that can add so much value to an organization.
Neurodiversity, I think, you know, there's so much value and opportunity in diversity, however you frame it. But I definitely think, you know, most of us in the business world are kind of lagging on the neurodiversity and understanding how to bring out the best in folks that think differently. And let's be honest, all of us in our own way have our own neurodiversity. No one is exactly the same. Nobody thinks exactly the same as others, but, you know, how to embrace that and harness the power of it is really, you know, If we can figure that out, the opportunity is exponential.
Yeah. I really want to bring, you just kind of checked me there for a second. I really needed to have more conversations around that topic of neurodiversity. Only in the last sort of 2-3 years have I really been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. There's not much conversation, in pockets, of course, in communities, but not really, from what I'm seeing anyway.
Well, I think for me too, just to be honest, one of my kids is ADHD, inattentive type. And so it has forced me to try to see things differently and to understand how the world could be better for him. As we try to help him be better for the world, the world could be better for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a learning curve for me because, you know, I almost hyper-focus. Like, I don't understand how you could, you know, I give you 3 things to do and you maybe do a half of one. I don't understand that concept, but as a parent, I've had to try to figure out why is that happening and what do I do to ensure that all 3 things get through to him and that he can be successful in that. And so, you know, I think it takes a lot of patience. And again, you know, I'm trying to ready him for, you know, the rest of high school and through college and getting a job. But the world being able to recognize the value, because also he's incredibly passionate and compassionate. He's a very caring person. He's very creative and he has these, I have an idea, right? And that spark that happens.
Organizations need that as well, right? Mm-hmm.
The follow through.
Someone
definitely
else.
Definitely needs help from someone else.
Yeah.
But the idea.
You know what? That sounds like me and Shane. Like I'm the my nickname as a kid growing up was Adrenaline.
Yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating because I was like this all over the place. Maybe I haven't been diagnosed, but like, and Shane's the guy that goes, all right, let's take that. Mm-hmm. And he goes and executes that with a team.
Right.
That's our strengths, and I recognize that's not my strength. I'm terribly organized. I'm all over the place. Lisa, my assistant's just there. She's probably looking at me going, "Yes, you are." But you recognize that and you understand those are the strengths. And
instead of beating yourself up for it, right, which is, I think, what many times, again, professionally in the past, we've been conditioned to do is like, oh, I have to overcome that, or like, oh, I really should be better, or I'm not very good at. Focus on what you are good at, and then you find the people around you that are complimentary and help you to let that light shine brighter and light up the dim spots, right? That's what my calendar is a mess. I need an EA.
I only just got one, and my life's changed, honestly.
I'm hopeful for that. and my team knows it, like, nothing. If I miss a meeting with them and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I'm double booked, you know, they don't take it personally, because it's not arrogance or a lack of effort. It's too much. So you find the people that really can complement, you know, your light, what you bring. And likewise, you know, when you have some of the people that are more analytical and very serious, you know, they can benefit from having people that are more gregarious and outgoing around them and kind of bring their ideas and things to light that they might not be as confident to share. So I think it's a very, you know, complementary situation when you can find your circle around you that really works to complement you.
Yeah. I try and look at it now through a lens of energy. Mm-hmm. And it took me and Shane a long while to realize. I was like, what do I do that gives me energy? And what I do that take away energy? And we kind of mapped them out. And it was only through a sort of a leadership retreat that we went to, where these other leaders who could look at our business externally going, why are you doing these things? When, because it's outside in, they can see it, right? We're so in the weeds that we couldn't even see that Chris having any involvement in finance and operations. Don't just stop doing that. And Shane having any involvement in product, creative and sales, it was sucking his energy, and vice versa for me. And we didn't even see it. Mm-hmm. And we just swapped a few of those roles around as we was building the business. And all of a sudden we just excelled. Like, in sales went up, you know, the quality of it, customer experience went up, everything went up, because we were just basically operating in areas that weren't aligned with our energy and our passions and our strengths. And I see so many people doing that now as well. It's like, we've actually moved people in roles in the business that they have no experience and background in, and put them in different roles that align with that energy. And it's been like, boom, you see the engagement, you see the enjoyment as well. So don't be afraid to say, I don't know how to do that. Or, like, again, you know, even though I'm the CEO of the business, honestly, I wouldn't even know how to do payroll. Like, I have no idea, like, how to pay. I have no idea how to pay the team. Like, honestly,
if you have it at home too. You know, my husband, he was a finance major, right? Like, he handles all of that stuff. Even stuff comes in, like my 401k, and he tries to show me. I'm like, you got it.
Whoa. Yeah, my wife's that for me, by the way, as well. Same thing. Yeah.
Part, I don't know. Okay, so, you know, it wouldn't be 2022 if we didn't talk about Wordle. So we all, my whole family plays Wordle.
What's online, that?
A little, love it.
I don't know what it is. I need, what's Wordle?
Oh my gosh, Chris. So it's like, I have to show you. So it's like a little gate. You try to guess the word and it blanks out the letters. I'll send you a link. You're going to.
How do I not know what this is? All right, cool. I'm in.
So it's great. So it's Wordle. I saw a meme and it was like, Wordle is the sourdough starter of 2022. So it's like the new craze that everybody's in.
Sourdough, so right. Yeah,
it's great. It's just a little brain game every day. There's a new puzzle each day. All four of my family, we do it. Well, there's a couple other offshoots, and one of them's called Nerdle. And Nerdle is numbers. And my husband was like, did you do Nerdle? And I was like, no.
That sounds like my idea of a nightmare. I'm like, why are you doing this to me?
Nope, not gonna do it. I don't even want to look at it.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you, Daddy. Wordle, I'm in Wordle, on the, yes. You know, yeah, it sounds like to me like it's my equivalent of probably playing Scrabble with the family.
It's exactly, so if you like, which I do, any of the word games. So it's fun, but it's such an analogy for like my life of like, yeah, words, thoughts, all of that, great. Numbers, it's not that I can't. It just depletes my energy.
Yeah. Well, it's the same way, like, I speak, obviously, you speak to CHROs every day, like leaders like yourself, and there's many that have recently joined functions as CHROs who have moved from another part of the business. Mm-hmm. So perhaps, you know, Lego Lauren Schuster, amazing guy. If you're listening, Lauren, hey, you know, background wasn't in HR, but moved to be the chief people officer of Lego. And I remember asking a question to him about, you know, how does it feel that you obviously don't have that background and experience in people analytics, in, you know, in benefits or whatever function? And he was like, I don't need to. I've got amazing people that love doing those jobs. That I've got an incredible team that I surround myself with that do those things. And I focus on those areas and my strengths and being and a leader. And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, it sounds so simple, but it is. A lot of us try and do everything and try and be the master of all of these things as well.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah. Listen, I want to jump into our quick fire round. Right, and I didn't give you these questions, so you got 30 seconds to answer each one.
Okay.
No pressure. This is our game show now. It's our version of that. First question: What are your hobbies and passions outside of the office?
A couple of them. I have lots of hobbies that are very akin to elderly women. I like to knit and crochet. I like tea.
Walking.
I do like tea.
Yeah, it's just so random. You know, it's whenever people say I like tea to people in the UK, normally it's like a sly dig. It's like if you like, it's like, oh, tea. Well, love. Oh, so you do actually like tea then?
Okay. I actually like tea. The whole, you know, Ted Lasso, which I can't have a conversation without Ted Lasso.
What a show.
The hot brown water.
Oh my God. Ted Lasso is a good show.
I do have lots of, you know, I'm well prepared for my elder years, but also one of my passions is the Warm Piggies Project, which you and I have talked about before. Yes. It's a charity that my kids and I started donating socks to the homeless. So we have drives every year and try to do some good things in between over the warm months, but we focus in the cold months providing socks to the homeless. So it's a big passion of mine.
How can people, is there a website? How can people donate? Is anyone like,
still working
listening
on all of that? Oh, okay. We're 5 years in and I've told my husband, this is the year I want to make us legit. So we're going to file for, our charity org status. We're on Facebook, the Warm Piggies Project, and lots of information there. And then also the Warm Piggies Project at gmail.com.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So I know we would say quick fire, but I do want to spend a bit more time on this. So why, what was the catalyst for you to do this, just out of curiosity?
It's a couple things. I used to volunteer a lot as a kid, just through different organizations, scouts or honor societies or whatever. So, as an adult, you get busy and you sometimes, you know, you write some checks or whatever, but it's not the same. My kids, I really wanted them to have an experience. You know, they were doing sports and things like that, but not really anything that was like community-based. So, I struggled a little bit politically with what was happening on the landscape in the U.S. for a few years. And I thought, okay, I can't change things at a macro level, but I can show at a micro level, you know, the importance of things. And you don't get much more micro than a pair of socks. But it was around the same time I saw an article that basically socks are the most needed and least donated items, followed by, honestly, like underwear.
For homeless people.
Underwear is a... Yeah, that's a very private thing to a lot of people. It seems kind of weird. So I was like, okay, let's go with socks. From that it started, and it started very small and humble, really just hitting up my neighbors in the neighborhood. To now I've literally gotten socks from all over the world.
And just for everyone listening, you have thousands of pairs of socks sent to your house, your home where you live. You're boxing them all up yourself.
In your dining room
and delivering them all. So I just want to commend you on that, because that is, amazing.
It was really great. And we took some of my older son's friends with us down to do our deliveries in downtown DC. And it was really moving for them. And I think, being able to show some of our kids' friends to these experiences of, literally pulling up to a stoplight and handing out socks to a homeless person that's in the median asking for money, right? The reaction has even been tears on their part and ours. So it's just a small thing, but
I don't think it is a small thing. And I think the imprint that the impact on obviously the people you're giving it to, but also the imprint that that's going to leave on your kids for compassion and, you know, because a lot of people aren't exposed to that. You don't see it. You kind of go through life taking things for granted, and there's nothing more, it doesn't get much more real than that, you know? So I think it's incredible. So when you got the website up and running and you're legit,
I will. Say, and at that point too, corporate donations will be wonderful. But just give us a little bit to get set up this year and we'll have it by our next campaign.
Amazing. All right. Next question then. If you could click your fingers and change one thing about HR, what would you change? So what's one of those frustrations that you're like, wish we could change this, whether it's perception or physically what's happening, you know, et cetera.
I think, there's sort of an intrinsic and an extrinsic view that I would have for it. So I think intrinsically, I want more HR professionals to stand with a sense of pride about what we do. I think it's been a role that's lagged, even other G&A functions. Like for years, a lot of people didn't see the CHRO on eyes level as the CFO, right? I think we're changing that, but we almost in the function adopted that for ourselves. And, you know, we put ourselves down a little bit. And I think it's time to try to like claim our space and recognize the importance, especially in the last couple of years. We're the caretakers of the organization. We're the ones dealing with people who have COVID or lost family members, or, you know, we're organizing, you know, sending, you know, oxygen canisters to India or whatever it is, right? Be proud of that. So that's the intrinsic. The extrinsic is that the business stops seeing us as the police. I mean, yeah, there's rules and there's requirements, and we're going to tell you what, you know, the risks are of your decisions, but we're partners, not police. It's not bad news when we walk in the room. Please stop with the OHRs here. Hate that. Hate it. So I think both, you know, if we stand a little taller in our seats, hopefully the business too is accepting of that and kind of lets us morph and change.
I love that. We're partners, not police. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be my LinkedIn clip.
There you go.
We're partners, not police. It's still true. You know what's funny? I just finished another podcast, like just before this. And when I asked your peer that question, they said the biggest frustration was still seen as the police, almost exactly the same. And also your other point of view of this is constant need for justification that they're adding value.
Right. You know, what's the ROI of X? Okay. Yeah. I think the other thing too, like, gosh, I'm on a roll, like not to keep adding things to the list, but I think too, the notion when we talk about attrition or recruiting, that all eyes turn to HR. And I really wish that management would see these as an us problem collectively.
It's not HR, it's a business. Exactly. Problem. Yeah.
I don't lose your people.
It's true. Like that is a big problem, isn't it? It's like we talk about culture or inclusion, diversity. The businesses that own that, not a function or a person, needs to own any of those things as well. But it's like, oh, it's HR. We'll go to HR about those things. So yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. All right.
We're not filling roles fast enough.
Yeah. Again, as a startup, as an entrepreneur, I look at that in a different lens now. Because I'm like, I have to do that. It opens the mind up from doing that. How do you think that your family and friends would describe what you do for a living?
My husband's amazing, and he's like, she's Wonder Woman. She's does all this. He's overly complimentary of me, so I have to rule that one out. My kids, I do think it's funny.
He's a smart, sounds like a smart man, by the way, just putting out there.
Yes, he is. And with my kids, I always think it's kind of funny. Like, what do you think you do? And I think if you'd asked them a couple of years ago, they'd be like, I don't know. She like manages people's stuff, you know? But I think that actually being home over the last couple of years, especially with my kids being home and through COVID, my older son actually got quite a view of what I do and listening to me. And also he's like, Mom, what do salespeople do? Because I think he heard me talking about my go-to-market team and their compensation and things like that, where he's like, tell me more about that. So I think, you know, it's been an eye opener, and he sees that it's that really cool? Part of the business, not just, oh, people's form needs to be filled out.
Yeah.
Who knows that now?
Isn't that so cool though? Because, you know, you used to hear back in the day of like, bring your kids to work, mm-hmm, type thing, but it never really meant what we're talking about. Like, it was more like, right, just bring them there. But like, I'd be really in, I've thought about this, and Robin, my daughter, she's only three, but I want to expose her to the business as much as possible early, mm-hmm, on, because I think, yeah, it's so valuable, like what you're saying, for the to understand. Like, again, I didn't understand what sales was until I was in it. There was a stigma attached to every salesperson, mm-hmm, trying to screw you over.
Right. Car salesman, not that there's anything wrong with used car salesmen.
Yeah, yeah, no, but you see what I'm, yeah, exactly, right? Whereas when I realized, when I got into sales, I realized actually, if you look at the overall demographic, salespeople are the most highly paid function in the world of all functions. Yeah. In fact,
what my son realized.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. In fact, in many companies, the top sales executives are making more than the CEO, of those businesses. My salespeople earn more than me in this business that I'm in right now. But again, I didn't know that because, mm-hmm, I wasn't exposed to it. So that's cool that they get to know a bit more about you and the role.
Yeah, and the options that are out there for them.
Exactly. Because you don't know what you don't know, right? It's like, right, imagine asking a kid, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? They don't know. Like, now my advice to, yeah, kids is like, just try, taste stuff. How do you know what food you like? You taste, right, it.
Yeah, right? Taste it. Well, my younger son, when he was in elementary school, we asked him that question. What do you want to be when you grow up? And he was like, an army man or a PE teacher?
Because those are the things he's exposed to, probably.
Well, I know.
So far apart as well, like,
right, like great options, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know until you try it. I think that's the thing. There's, again, we feel like we always have to fit this mold, and, yeah, and everyone has to have it mapped out that you go in here, you're studying, mm-hmm, this, and you end up, mm-hmm, here. Whereas I would say 99% of my friends who went to university do a job now that's nothing to do with what they studied, so far apart from what they studied as well. They're like, I wish I just did this in the first place. Yeah. As well. Have you ever considered a new career, not outside of HR? If so, what do you think you would do if you wasn't in HR?
Well, I always joke that the shoulder pad CMO I was talking about, she and I used to joke that if I wasn't in HR, I'd probably be in marketing. I love still the creative aspect, the branding piece, because even as HR, employee branding and what the brand represents is so critical. And I really want to be very tied in with marketing and our messaging. So I think really from a professional standpoint, if I wasn't doing HR, I'd probably do marketing. But really, I came up through high school and college doing flower arranging and working in a gift shop. So if I really had my druthers, I'd probably be doing something far more crafty and creative in a little tiny town.
Yeah, well, you can do the crafts and and arrangements, and you have really good marketing skills to grow the brand.
Right.
so you'd be set. But you're all right. That intersection between marketing and HR is getting closer and closer together. We talk about our online brand, our presence, employee value, mm-hmm, proposition. It really, if you have to kind of be quite proficient in social media, LinkedIn, you know, right, all of, I mean, that.
Look
all
at Glassdoor.
That. Glassdoor, that's exactly.
The paramount pieces, right, mm-hmm, of how you're putting things out, or even, you know, the LinkedIn, every post, everything, it's the attraction element. It's the dissuasion element too. If we put out something that's not right, it's a huge intersection.
Yeah, definitely. It's getting closer and closer. You know, what legacy would you want to leave behind for your kids?
So I think, you know, this is kind of personal, but, you know, I came up through, you know, childhood of divorced parents and, you know, not a great advantage start. But at some point all of that didn't matter. And just the fortitude and, you know, I think resilience of pushing through, and like, you can overcome pretty much most things. And, you know, I still recognize, even through all of that, I still had a degree of privilege that others do not. And so being humble and grateful at the same time, that's what I want my kids to work hard, be humble. Like, it's all the signs you see at Home Goods, you know, whatever. I know it's very, all the signs everybody puts around their house, but it's true. you know, be proud of yourself and walk with confidence, because, you know, everyone's overcome something in their life, but you always do your best. Even, you know, I like the Four Agreements book, and, you know, even if your best isn't that great, it's still your best, right? So you just leave behind an impression that, you know, of goodness, that you were a person that tried and a person that cared. And that would be, if my kids knew that when I leave this earth, then I've done a good job.
Amazing. A very, very last question. Mm-hmm. What one piece of advice would you give to, you know, the HR leaders of tomorrow?
I think I would go back to the vulnerability piece. I think the empathy and presence, being there, being human, setting an example and allowing the other leaders around you to be human and bring themselves to. I think HR has to kind of lead from the front on this effort. And, you know, the more human you are, it allows them to be that way with you. And then you kind of encourage and reinforce that behavior, and it makes it easier for them to be then vulnerable with others. But we have to start there. You know, I worked for somebody one time who told me, you know, she had X number of kids and nobody would ever know. And it was almost this like cautionary thing to me of like, be less of a mom. And I was like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
That's not going to work for me. Mm. But you know, I would never want that kind of thing. Like be all parts of yourself, because that's really what's going to bring out the best in everyone around you. And that's all the other, be credible, understand the business, all the other pieces. Yeah. Yes. Important for HR, just as our base curriculum, but where we'll make the most impact is on the empathy piece.
Amazing. Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. So I had a lot of fun. So thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. And let us know how everything goes. As soon as you have the link.
I will, for sure. Send it over,
post it on LinkedIn, tag us in. Mm-hmm. Create a LinkedIn page for it. Definitely do that.
I will, for sure.
If you want corporate involvement, definitely. We can help push it, get it out there, and for everyone and
that
everyone
would be
listening.
Awesome.
As well. I honestly love what you're doing. It's making a real impact. And I also love the fact that, as I said before, as a new parent, I think that's inspired me to perhaps think about ways of exposing Robin to something like that, because I think it's really impactful. Because one of my worries actually is that she may not have to experience the hardship I did growing up, which I know how valuable, it didn't feel great at the time, but I know how valuable that is.
Right. We don't wish that for our kids, right? Like the not having or the struggles that we went through, you know, I think as parents, we work really hard to make sure we don't do that, that we make life as comfortable for them. But I think it's incumbent upon us, the more fortunate that they are, that the more realistic they are about their fortune, and that they see an experience through the eyes of others. Don't be afraid to show your kids the realities that other people live with. I think we shelter maybe more than we should, and our children are far more capable of caring and processing and being empathetic than we give them credit for. So show her early, get her involved.
Yeah, love She'll that. Be great. Well, listen, I'll let you go. I wish you all the best until we next speak, and see you soon. All the best.
All right, Chris. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.